The Daily Mirror calls on you.
Football is about nothing unless it's about something, and what it is about.
I am going to get 100% out of here.
Oh, well, of course, there's a different way.
Welcome to the Mirror Football Podcast with me, Simon Head, coming off the bench this week to replace Steve Anglesey, who's off sunning himself somewhere in the Mediterranean. Coming up on this week's show, we've got John Cross on Arsenal, Alexi Lalas on the MLS, and now on the phone we've got Mirror Football columnist and pundit extraordinaire Robbie Savage. Hi Robbie, how's it going?
Hi, thanks Simon. Well, I think Steve's gone to Iceland, mate, because he doesn't come back brown, does he? Is he actually sunbathed when he goes on holiday?
I don't know. I think we need to find out when we get back and just sort of get him up against some sort of paint chart and find out whether he's changed colour. But to sort of kick things off, it's about 4 weeks into the new season. Have you had any pangs of regret that you've retired?
No, not really, no. People might look at it and on Twitter, Simon, I'm getting absolutely dog's abuse off people saying, you were the problem with Derby last year, you were too old, we've got a bit of pace in midfield now, but what they got to think about is they got to be really thankful to me, Sam, that I did retire, because, you know, with me leaving, that allowed Derby to bring in 9 players on my wage.
And they've obviously had a really good start as well, sort of 4 wins out of 4. Do you think that's sort of vindication for the, you know, the board at Pride Park for sort of keeping Nigel Clough in position?
Well, Nigel Clough had a lot of work to do in terms of, you know, restructuring the finances of the players, the playing staff. It was vast amounts of money you were paying people in the Championship. So, you know, you had to cut all that first, which he done, you know, exceptionally well. Now, hopefully, they're going to see the rewards of that. You know, he's got his own players in now. He's, you know, for them to start 4 wins out of 4, I didn't see that coming, if I'm being completely honest. I thought they'd be near at the bottom of the table, now at the top, but it's a fantastic start. I went to watch them against Blackpool, and they were terrific. Deserved to win. You know, and if they could take something this weekend against Burnley, what a start.
Yeah, it's impressive stuff from Cluffy's boys. It's as I say, they've played 5 games this season, 4 of them in the league, and they've obviously won those 4. The one game they lost was in the first round of the Carling Cup, and obviously we've had round 2 this week. All 3 of the Premier League new boys got knocked out after making almost universal changes throughout the whole of their team. QPR losing 2-0 at home to Rochdale, Norwich being done 4 at home to MK Dons, and Shrewsbury beating Swansea City 3-1 at home. What do you think of the attitude that the promoted teams are taking to this competition? Because obviously Neil Warnock's come out and said he's glad that QPR are out of the competition. Obviously you've played in these big sides in the early rounds of the Cup. What, you know, how did you approach it?
I don't understand it, Simon, at all, to be fair. I don't understand any manager in the Premier League of a lesser team, just because they want to stay in the Premier League for a week inside, and, you know, the chances of them going out has been shown that they will go out, because nonsense. I play for a lesser club like a Leicester, in terms of you're talking about United, Tottenham, Everton, the bigger clubs, you know, and we won it. Played in 2 finals, and it was for the city, it gave a huge boost. You know, for a player, you know, you're not telling me the likes of Sean, Berry and Paddy, Kenny, QPR might never have a chance of playing the cup final. You're not telling me they would have not loved to have played in the Carling Cup final. I think it's shocking how people treat this competition. You know, having won it, nobody likes to see Neil Warnock's team get beat, do they? You know, my nose just grew by 4 foot. To be fair, it's 8 foot now. you know, for the older pros and for the younger guys, a chance to play at Wembley in a cup final is a dream come true. So I think it's shocking the way the lesser clubs treat this competition.
Warnock's come out and said that he thinks that the competition should be revamped. Do you agree with that?
That's why I try and change it. You know, you're telling me the likes of Aldershot and all that last night were thinking, well, we need to change this competition. They'd be absolutely buzzing. And you know, for players who've got beat, you know, QPR players, Swansea players, West Ham players, whatever team they fielded, they'll be this morning gutted because they've lost. Simple as that. Don't need to change it at all.
And of course, the big guns, they always get interested when it gets to the quarterfinals, semi-finals anyway. So why not take an interest from the start?
Play at Wembley and win. You know, despite what people say about me, Simon, yeah, I had 89 yellow cards and sometimes I was a bit of an egg on the football field, but You know, I played at Wembley twice and won a competition.
Is it because there's too much money now in the Premier League? There's so much of a focus on staying in the Premier League.
West Ham, Simon. West Ham played for the other weekend team, didn't they, last night? And they're in the Championship.
Yeah.
I just don't understand it at all. It probably is because there's so much money flying about, but, you know, surely a cup run can enhance, you know, you can be confident. At Leicester, it gives us massive confidence. You know, we had a great cup run. You know, we won it. Then they lost. We lost in the final. No, I think they beat Middlesbrough in 1997. Then they lost against Spurs in 99. Then we beat Tranmere in 2000. And that City for them 3 years was absolutely buzzing. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and it made our league form better.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, good form breeds more good form, doesn't it? It's confidence throughout the team.
I'm surprised with Neil Warnock, Simon, because, do you know what I mean? He is a winner, isn't he? People can say what they want about him, you know, and I do, and he hammers me and stuff, he does. But whatever they say about that guy, he is a winner, right? And I think it cares to him to get beat. But last night, for hearing him to say that, I was shocked. I was shocked because I thought Neil Warnock, any manager would think, no, you know, because he's never managed in the Premier League for that amount of time, you know, 1 or 2 years, because he's, you know, not managed a team in a cup final, I think somebody like him would have thought, right, okay, we have a chance here. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was shocked, really, that what his limbs have the attitude he did towards the competition. Just knowing him because he is a winner. And it just depends on what people say about him, do you know what I mean?
On the topic of QPR and Neil Warnock, can you see him getting on with Joey Barton? Because it looks like Joey Barton is on the verge of a move to QPR. I understand he's sort of mulling over a contract offer as we speak.
Well, I think you just got to look at what Joey Barton's on the pitch last year for Newcastle. You know, he turned it around. He was their player of the year. I'm not sure, but he was fantastic for them. You know, why not? I think Joey's troubles are behind him. You know, I like Joey Barton. He's a winner. And QPR, Joey Barton for QPR would give them a better chance of staying up, in fact.
Are you not slightly surprised that perhaps some slightly larger Premier League clubs haven't been in for him? Or do you think they're a little bit wary of his past?
Well, I'm surprised they haven't come for him, yeah, because on a free transfer, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
I'm surprised no bigger clubs are coming for him.
Well, I think it'd be, you know, a decent signing for QPR if that move goes through.
It'd be great signing for QPR. It'd
be interesting to see how he goes. Another big transfer that's just been completed, Samir Nasri's obviously joined Manchester City. He's had a little bit of a pop at the Arsenal fans on his way out as well.
Wrongly, I think.
He's saying that they haven't been as passionate since they moved to the Emirates Stadium. What's your take on that?
I've been to the Emirates Stadium a few times, and they are passionate. I think all fans of every club is passionate. I think it was a bit, you know, probably naive to say that, really, because you're going to have to go up against them again. They give them, you know, irrespective of what people think about Arsenal in this current situation, what they've done, they've given them the platform to play. They've given the platform to be worth $25 million, and then Wenger again, you know, took a chance on him. So I think it's disrespectful to say that to their fans. It's a bit naive because I think, you know, all fans of every club is passionate, you know. So, you know, sometimes people say things in heat of the moment, you know, when they've moved because they're relieved or because they've got what they wanted. And, you know, I think it's, you know, I might be a hypocrite saying because I want to leave Birmingham, but, you know, but the fans there for me were great. I wouldn't say I'll move to Blackburn because they had more passionate fans. I went basically to be closer to mum and dad and for more money.
And I think that's certainly that's certainly something he's going to be getting at Manchester City, and that's more money. And on the topic of money, obviously Nasri's left Arsenal, Fabregas has left Arsenal. There's obviously a big focus on Arsene Wenger at the moment. They had a massive game last night against Udinese, which they got through. Big test that they passed last night. If you're in Arsene Wenger's shoes now, what would you be looking to do with the obviously sizeable transfer kitty that he must have at his disposal now? Who should he be signing?
Well, that's a very, very, very good question. That is, you know, as a pundit and as somebody who's, you know, said he should buy people, when you actually think about the situation, you think Spurs, I think Spurs need a centre forward. But who is there out there? You look at Arsenal, who they get. For me, I've got to look at a centre-half, either a Samba or a Gary Cahill. You know, that Englishness at the back. I'd buy a left-back. I'm sure Arsenal's scouting system is enough. I'd go for Leighton Baines.
Yeah.
And in the middle of the park, I'd go for somebody like a Scott Parker or a TLT from Newcastle. I think that just gives them a bit of, you know, a bit of toughness, a bit of steel, a bit of Englishness.
And do you think they need any more up front? Obviously, you've got Robin Van Persie, Theo Walcott.
I'd play Theo down the middle.
You'd give him a bit more of a sort of a senior role through the middle.
Two goals against Udinese. First one was a volley run across the near post, put it in his left foot. And the second one last night, one-on-one with the keeper, give the keeper the eyes, fantastic finish. I think he's a better centre-forward than his wide. And I think at the wide, he has too much time to think, to pick people out. Yes, he has improved massively on his crosses, but still can be better. So I think, for me, Theo Walcott, I think, is a better centre-forward than his wide man.
And how do you think Arsenal's season is going to pan out from here, obviously? I mean,
well, I think last night, people on Twitter and that saying, yeah, what are you going to say now? But I think it just that's just going to not prolong the agony, because getting qualifying for the 14th straight year to Champions League is a massive achievement. But they're not going to win it. I think the best Arsenal can hope for is winning the Carling Cup,
which they're still in, obviously. Yeah. They haven't had the chance yet. So something else that happened in the early hours of this morning, we spoke about it just before we went on air with the show. The Mirror Football Twitter account got hacked in the early hours of this morning. Thankfully, we've got it all back now. I guess there are people who don't like our jokes very much. But with that in mind, I wanted to ask you a question. Who are the biggest hackers that you've encountered on the pitch, Robbie?
I wouldn't say hackers. The one I didn't like playing against was Wisey, Dennis Wise. Not he was a hacker, just he was a real irritant. You know, he used to pick you up, like under the armpit, grabbing in different ways. And, he was a master of winding you up. And, that's why I learned most of my tricks from off him. So I wouldn't say he was a hacker, but I'd say he was a very intelligent footballer, done great for Arsenal, but, just that one player who, when you played against, you'd love to have smashed into each other in a 50-50.
Who else out there who you played against you thought, I'm going to be in for a hard afternoon against this guy?
Everybody. Because there's an argument to say, I had a discussion with Kevin Keegan, who I do SPM with, the other day, and say we were talking at, how many millions and thousands of kids or people want to play football in this country? To play at conference level, you have to be a good player. You think how many millions there are who don't make it. So to play in the conference, you've got to be a good player. To play in league football, you have to be a very good player. And to play in the Premier League, you have to be a great player. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because there's so many people who don't make it. So to play in the Premier League, you have to be a great player. Because thousands and thousands and thousands of people out there who play, you'll go on a park and say, oh, he's a good player. You think how much higher the conference is than that. So everybody makes a footballer is a good player. So, they're all in the Premier League great players. So they were all hard games.
Excellent. And finally, before we go, what are your movements this weekend? What games are you taking in this weekend?
Well, this afternoon I'm having a tattoo done.
Are you really?
I'm getting rid of the Imani badge because I've had a long, hard look at myself. on holiday. I've got two beautiful kids on my arm. And, when I wear a vest, people look at me thinking, he's got an Imani tattoo now. What an absolute idiot. So that's going. That we're covered over today. And then I'm down to London at the weekend. I'm doing Final Score on BBC One on Saturday. Then I'm doing City and Spurs on Sunday with Kevin Keegan, ESPN.
Excellent. That's pretty much it. I think we're pretty much done. You can follow the man on Twitter, at RobbieSavage8. Watch him on ESPN and on BBC Final Score. But most importantly, you can read him in the Daily Mirror and on Mirror Football every Friday. Robbie, thanks very much for joining us on the Mirror Football podcast.
Yes, Sam.
Okay, fresh from his trip to Italy to watch Arsenal progress to the group stages of the Champions League is Mirror Football's John Cross. John, thanks for joining us.
Absolute pleasure.
Let's talk about the match first off. Arsenal obviously went into that game with their backs against the wall. A lot of players missing, key players leaving the club, but they produced a superb performance against Udinese.
Yeah, they did. I thought the most positive thing to come out of it really was, I think at half-time, I really thought that Arsenal would go down, looking very fragile, very vulnerable at the back, I thought. It was a real test to their mettle and their confidence and their belief, I think. And I think the biggest thing you can say is that in the second half, they really came out with a newfound spirit and determination, which ultimately got them the result they needed. But also really bode well for the rest of the season, I thought, in terms of, they need to dig in and they need to show that sort of character, especially in the next few weeks, I think, because there's a big few weeks coming up for Arsenal. And I think if they can show that again on Sunday at Old Trafford, then that's vital. But moving forward, they need to kind of keep that togetherness and that spirit in the dressing room. And I think that was the biggest positive I would draw from the Udinese win, together, of course, with the with the windfall and the challenge that they get from qualifying for the group stages.
And obviously, one of the things that people have been looking at is the relative lack of senior players at the club and how, you know, the amount of backbone that they need to bring in terms of new signings. But, you know, the guys they've got in place at the moment, people like Vermaelen, Song, Van Persie, even Szczesny in goal, they all stood up and played their part last night.
Yeah, they did. I thought that Van Persie really showed what he was all about as the new captain. Crucial goal, well taken finish, and beyond that, he was, you could see him barking out instructions and trying to G the team on. I thought the introduction of Ruzicki at half time was significant. I don't think he necessarily had his best game in the second half, but I thought what he brought was a little bit of experience, a little bit of know-how, and just seemed to gel things together, provide a little bit more balance and inspiration to it. I think you're right. I think everything that you say there is spot on about the sort of experienced players. But I think what they need now is just a little bit more quality from a couple more experienced additions to the squad. If they can do that, Arsenal, before the end of the transfer window, then I think they can have a good season. As I see it now, I think the squad in place will be battling to finish fourth. I think with two or three really good top quality signings, and I think they can go beyond that and challenge for silverware.
And obviously they're still in with a shout of silverware in Europe in the Champions League. They've been drawn in pot one of the Champions League draw, which is really important, I think. Just looking through the four pots, it's a really intriguing draw that's going to take place at 4:45 this afternoon. I mean, potentially Arsenal could find themselves in a group, despite being in the top pot, with the likes of AC Milan, Lille and Borussia Dortmund. I mean, this is a really strong-looking Champions League draw.
Yeah, it is. I think it's a major test. I think also the quality of the opposition will inspire, I think, as well. I think that Arsenal need a strong European campaign to restore some belief and some faith, I think, throughout the squad. And I think I think European football is something that really inspires Arsene Wenger. I think it would have so hurt him to fail to reach the group stages. I think he sees it as a challenge personally. I think he sees it as absolutely essential for his players to be playing on that stage. I think it helps them improve, develop as individuals, as players and technique. And I think, you know, he regards it as so important. I think you can see that rubs off on the players. I think the players, when they put in those sort of situations, you know, you're going to get bare minimum of six games and some really hard games, really hard tests, and I think that brings out the best in players. I think you can tell that the teams slightly below who have been struggling in recent seasons to sort of get into that top four, that they've missed out on that kind of experience and that sort of quality that the Champions League offers and helps and enhances.
And obviously now they're through, you know, there was a lot of focus on Arsene Wenger leading into this game and what sort of situation he would find himself in after this match. Now they're through and they're guaranteed that Champions League group stage. They've got the financial benefit of being in there, 20 million plus. That presumably would go into the pot of money that Wenger, you know, potentially has available to spend on players. Now that status is secured, what should Gunners fans expect from Wenger in terms of recruitment now? Because there's not that much of the transfer window left. And everyone knows that Arsene Wenger needs to sign and that there's money available.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a real, you know, you put the whole equation together. They've got money to spend. They've got very little time to spend it and they're desperate for players. It is licensed to kind of, you know, for owners of other clubs to say, Arsenal, you've held out for big prices on Nasri and Fabregas. Do you really think we're going to sell you our players on the cheap? Absolutely no chance. So I think that's what Arsenal are up against. I think they've left themselves short time. It shouldn't have come to this. I think, you know, I'm a great believer in, you know, Fabregas was a bit of a saga, but you had to take that, you know, to the wire with Barcelona because they weren't willing to pay what he was worth. He was a player with 4 years left. And I think, you know, you had to hold out for a decent price on that. With Nasri, I think it's slightly different in that I think a few weeks ago, it was obviously evident that City were willing to pay and pay then. And Arsenal have now left it until now. It's going to be difficult for Arsenal to kind of get the player that they want at the right price. And as we all know, the right price is essential for Arsene Wenger. It's something that, you know, he sees almost as essential as the sort of the quality of the player. So I think he's really going to be up against them in the next few days.
Do you think the issue is almost not so much the price that they're going to be paying for the players, but more the wages that they'll have to pay to secure them. Because obviously, you know, the money's there in the bank, they can actually pay for the players. But it's the wage structure as well, which Arsene Wenger has, he's kept a tight rein on that over the years.
He has, but it's interesting because, you know, I'm sure sort of, you know, regular Arsenal followers will have seen, you know, sort of stories around on the web, you know, about Arsenal's pay structure being a handicap for their recruitment. And in particular, I think Juan Mata, I think that really simplifies, you know, what happened with Juan Mata. I think that he wasn't on very good money. I say not very good money. It's fantastic money for anyone else in any walk of life at Valencia. To suggest Arsenal couldn't afford his wages, I just think he's plain wrong. I think that he was happy, willing, ready and able to come to Arsenal. I think Arsenal then slightly caught a cold on him because they thought that Hazard, Eden Hazard at Lille, would be their preferred first option. While they did it, Chelsea moved in and Chelsea were willing to pay, you know, better wages to Mata. But Arsenal could match, I think, what Chelsea would probably end up paying in terms of wages for Mata, because Arsenal are very good players, but what they do is they pay their top earners, like Fabregas, for example, was on around 90 grand a week basic, which is a great wage, but basically, you know, other clubs in Man City and Man United have taken it to a whole new level for their top earners. What Arsenal do is pay the whole squad a very high level. So you might have the Diabes, just for example, of this world, on £60,000 a week, which is great. You know, I'm sure they live well and that's a great wage. But also it means that this summer, when it comes to moving players on like Diabes, Bentner, you know, possibly even to a lesser extent Arshavin, it's proved really difficult. Arsenal want to keep a tight ship, run the wage structure sensibly, and I think that has sort of a double-edged sword, really. Keep some players happy, but others not. And I think it's sort of, while I applaud them for keeping a tight ship, it's going to cause certain situations, but I don't think it's going to ever prove a point that is going to prevent them from signing Jan and Beer, for example, or Hazard, or for that matter, I don't think it would have ever prevented signing one.
Right, and you've mentioned two names there who will appear in your column on Mirror Football today, Jan and Villa and Eden Hazard. Who else is on that list of people who you think Arsene Wenger should be targeting?
Well, I think desperately, I think what he needs is a centre-half. I think even almost before the previous two, you know, is perhaps more glamorous and exciting they would be. I think he really needs to sort of head it, tackle it and kick it, you know, defender, really. I think Gary Cahill is a deal to be done. I think Arsenal balked at the £17 million price on his head. I think in realistic terms, the price is there because there's a clause in his contract, a release clause. He's got 1 year left. You know, that's quite a rare thing. And Arsenal perhaps see that, you know, that they sold Nasri with a year left at £22 million. Well, how does that sort of relate to Gary Cahill? And why I can see that, I think sometimes, you know, a player's only worth what a club is prepared to pay. And I think that's what Arsenal are up against, really. I think they'll have to go for that. I think, actually, that Wenger's first choice in centre-half has been, and still is, Phil Jagielka, because he does everything well, whilst others have sort of drawbacks. And I think Cahill's drawbacks is another factor in them believing that he's not really worth £17 million, which I think is probably fair, but, you know, that's today's market, and that's, you know, also a reflection that Bolton know that Arsenal have got some money and they'll be holding out for that. So I think the centre-half is the priority. I think Mbeya would provide midfield strength. It'd be interesting to see whether Wren, having had a new offer from Arsenal on the table, will sort of buckle and sell. That would be a good deal for Arsenal. I think they face a harder task in getting them to part company with Eden Hazard, who's been on Wenger's wish list for a couple of years now. So while I think Arsenal have bid for him, I think that is going to be a difficult deal to be done. But what I would say is, I'd be really surprised if Arsenal don't sign, you know, make a statement of intent before the window shuts. And I think most fans are crying out for that now. I think it's certainly something Arsenal need to take them forward this season.
And obviously, you know, it's a big race against time for them. So, as you know, as well as identifying the players, which I'm sure Wenger's already done, he's got to get the deals done. He's got to get them through by the end of the transfer window. If for some reason Wenger fails to sort of get these players in by the end of the window, can you see a situation developing where you see his position coming under threat? Because there seems to be two distinct groups of fans at the moment. You've got the In Arsenal Retrust, sort of, you know, the hardcore who've been there for years and years, and they've stuck with Wenger through thick and thin. And then you've got others who are beginning to run out of patience a little bit.
Yeah, no, I think it's a really interesting scenario. We're sort of talking about this on the way home, Arsene Udinese. I do think it lifts the pressure on Arsene Wenger, and I think Arsene Wenger has been quick to kind of point the finger at the media, you know, for stirring up the trouble. What I would say is that I think he's had some pretty heavyweight support. You know, when you've got newspapers like The Times doing page two leader columns on why Arsene Wenger is brilliant for Arsenal, then I think that is pretty strong support. I've written extensively that I think that he's still the right man for the job, which is still my kind of belief. And I think other people have done so as well. The Daily Mail, for example. It is the fans. It's the fans who you hear, during games that have been restless. It's those ones chanting, you know, spend some money. You hear them at games, they're getting fed up with Wenger. You can't get away from that. It's not the media on the chances. It slightly begins to wind me up, because then you get the backlash from the fans sort of after Arsenal winning Udinese. See, we told you so, but you know, your headlines are different now. Well, it's not really ours, you know, it's the supporters that are getting restless, and I think, you know, I think that there's no getting away from that, really. And I do think there's... I still believe that the majority of Arsenal fans want to give Arsene Wenger a chance to turn things around, and time and patience, which he needs, and I believe he has earned and has gained that kind of respect for. And I think he should be afforded that opportunity. But I do think that supporters will be really restless if Arsenal don't do serious business between now and the end of the window. I think if they end up with this squad, they'll struggle to finish fourth. That's the long and short of it. And I think if Arsenal don't finish in the top four, and I think Arsene Wenger's position at the end of the season will be difficult, you know. I think it will be under intense scrutiny. And I think the most scrutiny it will be under is from the fans. And I think Ivan Gazidis, you know, said at a supporters group meeting recently that, you know, ultimately Arsene Wenger is answerable to the fans. I think when the pressure becomes too much from the supporters, then that's something that Arsene Wenger is going to find hard to ride out. I believe that, you know, if Arsene Wenger brings in at least two quality players before the end of the window, then I think Arsenal's season will be very different. And I think they, you know, not only can they finish in the top four, but they can challenge for trophies. I, for one, hope that becomes a reality.
And they've got a nice easy game this weekend, of course. Manchester United. It doesn't get any easier for him, does it? So Manchester United this weekend, that's another massive test coming off the back of a really difficult European away trip. How can you see him approaching this game? Is it going to be just try and shut up shop? Because United look rampant at the moment.
They do, and they look really good. I think the one thing Arsenal perhaps can take hope is that, you know, when a team produces such a brilliant performance as United did in the second half against Scotland, maybe, you know, they'll sort of be complacent next time out. I think Arsenal will need that, because they're missing so many players to injury and suspension at the moment. It's difficult to work out exactly who they're going to play and where. You know, you go through it, they're missing Jovino, missing Song, they're missing Wilshere. You know, Riziki has been carrying an injury, that's why he didn't start. It's, you know, Koscielny is out. It's, it leaves him so short. Gibson's struggling for Sunday. It leaves him so short, Arsenal in reserves. I think it's a major worry. You go through it, it's very difficult to see how they're going to sort of line up, and Fling Pong is another suspension. You know, they're running out of players. I mean, it really is a task, if you think about it, to try and name a midfield three. Maybe you should sort of look at the system and change things around a bit. But even then, that's a challenge in itself. So it's a huge ask. What I would say is if Arsenal can get a point then, I think then in previous seasons, Arsenal would go to Old Trafford hoping for a win. If Arsenal can get a point, that would be seen as a massive result and a massive boost for Arsenal.
And whoever they do field, you'll be able to read all about that on Mirror Football throughout the weekend. Don't forget, you can follow John on Twitter, at John Cross Mirror, and you can read him in the Daily Mirror and, of course, on mirrorfootball.co.uk. His column will be live on the website this afternoon. Make sure you check that out. John, thanks very much for joining us on the Mirror Football podcast.
Thank you very much.
Great stuff. OK, joining us from across the pond is former USA international, Mirror Football blogger and ESPN analyst Alexi Lalas. Alexi, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
The big news from the MLS, of course, is the arrival of a certain former Tottenham striker, Republic of Ireland international Robbie Keane. How's that move gone down over in the States?
People are excited. You know, I think LA Galaxy fans are excited, and I think MLS fans in general are excited. It's a big name. He's coming to the biggest club, for lack of a better word, the super club in MLS. And he is, from a Galaxy standpoint, what they hope is the missing piece in their quest to get MLS Cup, which is huge because this is David Beckham's last year. MLS Cup is happening and being held at their home stadium, at the Home Depot Center. And, you know, as a big club, they want to win some silverware.
And as it stands at the moment, the Galaxy have got the best record in the MLS, so presumably he's going to be brought in to start as well. So who's going to be the man in the current lineup who's going to miss out?
Well, I think right now Juan Pablo Angel has gone over to Chivas USA, which is the other club in Los Angeles. And it's kind of difficult to understand for folks on the outside the different rules and guidelines that we have with Major League Soccer. But essentially, if you're going to bring in a big money player, you only have three spots, and we call them designated players. And the Galaxy already had them in David Beckham, Landon Donovan, and Juan Pablo Angel, who many of you know from the EPL. Juan Pablo had a horrible year, as a shell of his former self in terms of his production, and so this is definitely an upgrade. But in order to bring Robbie Keane in, they had to ship Juan Pablo Angel over to Chivas USA to make room from a roster standpoint. But as I said, you know, Robbie Keane, for all intents and purposes, certainly is an upgrade from Juan Pablo Angel, and he's being brought in to do one thing, the thing that he's been brought in to do in every place that he's gone, and that is to score goals.
And Keane's 31 years of age, and from my point of view at least, he could certainly still have done a good job at Premier League level and definitely at Championship level. How do you think he'll fare in the MLS?
Well, I think there's the actual football on the field, which I think he'll find very quickly is of a much higher level than people and he perceives. But I think, you know, we also have to give some players time to acclimate to a new country and a new culture. It does take time. But, you know, look, he scores goals, and it doesn't matter where you go. If you're being paid a lot of money, and no doubt about it, he's being paid a lot of money, that's what he needs to do. I think that the Galaxy overpaid, but in a certain sense, since they are a super club, we expect that, and we want them to do that as a club. They're always going to pay a premium. But, you know, like I said, they are spending a tremendous amount of money for that final picture, if you will, of them holding that trophy at the end of the year, which is the be-all and end-all when it comes to Major League Soccer, MLS Cup.
Yeah, and in terms of the standard of the MLS, which was something you touched upon there, when you compare it to other leagues, such as the big European leagues, would you say that the general standard of play in the MLS is improving?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. I mean, I think that there is a perception versus reality problem when it comes to MLS. And to be fair, you know, respect is something that is earned over time. And sometimes you need some messengers. And whether it's a David Beckham or a Thierry Henry or, in this case, a Robbie Keane, that message goes out that you might have a perception of what it is on and off the field. And when you finally get there, oftentimes players are pleasantly surprised and very impressed with the level that goes on. Also, while I might call the Galaxy a super club and one of the elite clubs, the reality is that there is a salary cap, and so there is this manufactured parity that exists, which is unlike anywhere in the world where you have your top two or four teams in many leagues and then everybody else. That doesn't necessarily exist, so it is incredibly competitive, and I think Robbie Keane will find that out.
And in terms of the developmental side of the game over there in the States, How much of a battle is it for soccer to compete alongside the more, you know, the more traditional US sports, football, baseball, basketball, especially with the college system there, and trying to recruit young lads coming through that sort of system to play soccer rather than perhaps the more traditional American sports?
Well, the competition between other sports is immense, and you know, it's a situation where we have a culture that is not soccer-based, and that's just the reality of American culture. Having said that, the leaps and bounds that we've made have been pretty impressive on and off the field with both the quality of soccer and the infrastructure, stadiums, TV contracts, all that kind of stuff. You know, that's important, and I think we have to be very, very proud with what we've done. Got a long way to go, but as I said before, I think that there is a recognition a lot of times when either players or teams come over here and face Major League Soccer that that there is a quality that exists over here. As far as the development of players, you still have the college game, universities, players coming out of there, but also MLS clubs have all established their own academies. And so they are looking to develop young talent from a competitive standpoint to have that next star out there on the field helping them win, and from a business standpoint to possibly sell on players in the market that we all know and love.
And obviously one of the big sort of selling points for the sport over there is the success of the national team, which seems to be getting stronger at every major tournament. Is that being reflected in the you know, the young players coming through into the MLS, or do you think it's due to more of the players leaving the States to ply their trade overseas in the big European leagues?
You know, I'm not one of those that says in order to be successful you have to play overseas. You know, I was fortunate to do it, but I think that there is quality that exists in both players that have gone and played in domestic leagues around the world outside of the U.S., and there is quality that exists in Major League Soccer, in MLS players that have stayed here. So I think the national team program has been successful just because we've put a lot of resources and time and energy into developing talent. And, yes, they have gotten the opportunities around the world to go and play at a higher level, and they've come back as a group and as a unit and figured it out. Better coaching, like I said, and just, you know, year after year you get better on and off the field, and so you know, it stands to reason that you're going to improve as a national team.
And back to the topic of Robbie Keane, just to sort of finish off, in your MLS blog on Mirror Football this week, you said that he could be the man to help bring the LA Galaxy some silverware this season. If we were going to put your neck on the line now, will Keane win silverware with the Galaxy this year?
Here's the problem. Major League Soccer, as a league, I mean, you said the Galaxy is doing well. They're well in line right now to win the Supporters Shield, the best club during the regular season. Then we go into the playoffs, which is something a little foreign to folks around the world. And unfortunately, it ends up being a crapshoot. It's rare that the Supporters Shield winners go on and become MLS Cup winners, because all you need is one bad day, and we've been involved in soccer long enough to know that it happens even to the best of them. One bad day and you're knocked out of the playoffs and you miss out on MLS Cup. I think Robbie Keane has the ability to do so, and let's be honest, he's being brought in to score those big goals, and I think he'll score some big goals. But I've just seen so many times in Major League Soccer where the best team doesn't end up on top at the end of the year. Now, the Galaxy have hedged their bets incredibly with the amount of money that they've spent, and certainly with this latest signing in Robbie Keane, so they will be the odds-on favorite. But if I was a betting man, I would say that something strange will happen, and those flukes that we see consistently in MLS in playoff play will happen, and it'll just be one of those days, and somebody else will end up holding up the trophy.
And viewers over here in the UK will be able to watch the MLS live and exclusive on ESPN. Robbie Keane, you'll be able to watch him in action for the Galaxy when they take on the New York Red Bulls on Sunday, August the 28th, and that'll be live from midnight on ESPN. Plus, of course, you can check out Alexi's regular MLS blog right here on Mirror Football. Alexi, thanks very much for joining us on the Mirror Football podcast.
My absolute pleasure.
And that just about wraps things up for the Mirror Football podcast this week. Thanks to John, Robbie and Alexi. And we'll be back next week on the Mirror Football podcast. Don't forget you can follow us on Twitter at Mirror Football. And obviously you can go to the website www.mirrorfootball.co.uk. Enjoy the matches. We'll be back next week.
The Daily Mirror calls on you.
Football is about nothing unless it's about something. And what it is about...
Yes. I am going to get 100% out of here.
Oh, well, of course, there's a different way.
Thank you for downloading this podcast, a Mirror Digital production. The Mirror Football podcast theme music is the cunningly titled Football by the band Peers. That's P-E-E-R-S. Check them out at myspace.com/wearepeers. myspace.com/wearepeers.